You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Locked On Vikings on the Locked On Podcast Network, a Thursday morning in the Twin Cities in the Cumulus Radio Studios. My name's Sam Ekstrom. My co-host is Sage Rosenfels, the 311th episode. Sage, we missed you yesterday, but we're glad to have you today to talk a little bit about the Rams and touch on the Vikings' decision to stick with Case Keenum, which I'm sure will make you happy. I think a lot of people were pleased to see that decision yesterday. But I want to start with something strange and a little unprecedented that has come up related to media with Greg Olsen, the Carolina Panthers tight end, on a bye week.
Okay. He's injured and out for the season. Feel like he broke something or tore something and it was out for the year. Either way, it's sort of been a new thing a little bit when a player is out for an extended period, but it really out for the season that these television stations are hiring them to do in-studio analysis, whether it's ESPN, pregame, postgame, during the week. It's sort of an opportunity for those players who don't have a lot going on to, start working on their post-career, broadcasting work. And so, obviously, Olsen has been hired by, I'm not sure if it's CBS or Fox, to call a Vikings game, maybe call a couple games or just call one game, I'm not sure. But one of those games will be a Vikings game this week. And as you were about to explain, Rick Spielman not happy with it because – those play-by-play guys and those analysts, those color guys, are getting extra information in those Saturday night production meetings. They just simply are. Whether it's coaches, players, that you do sort of have a little bit more free reign to speak openly about, who you like on your team, as far as who's fast, who struggles to catch the ball, who you're going to attack on the other team. You get in the game plan a little bit. So those guys, guys like Troy Aikman, have an idea what's going on when they're calling the game on Sunday. It makes it a better experience for the fan at home when, guys like Aikman or whoever have that extra information. So obviously Rick Spielman not happy about the fact that Greg Olsen is going to be calling the Vikings game, going to be getting a lot of information, which obviously isn't for this week, but in coming weeks, he could possibly, tell his teammates over in Carolina to be used against the Vikings.
Yeah, you pretty much hit the nail on the head, and I did a little bit of Googling, and Greg Olsen is hurt right now on IR, eligible to return here later in the season. So that's sort of the situation with him, and he's actually been very, very outspoken about this, about how he doesn't get why it's an advantage, and Fox has backed him up and saying, no, this is going to be great. We're not going to let Greg in on these production meetings. But Minnesota, as you pointed out, is saying, well, no, you're going to be working with the people who are getting this information. And here's the quote from Greg Olsen. The notion that I'm going to gain an unfair advantage is crazy. We have scouts at every game across the league. I'm going to have enough trouble on my hands broadcasting a game, let alone looking for little nuances on the sideline. And I get it. Like, during the game itself, that's not necessarily an advantage for Olsen, because he's going to watch the game tape anyway. It's more so what's happening before the production with him talking to Kevin Burkhart and Charles Davis. Now, here's another reason why Minnesota would be upset. Kevin Burkhart and Charles Davis did their game last week. So Vikings might have given them secrets last week without realizing that, they're going to be working with Greg Olsen the week after. So regardless, if Minnesota, sits down with them this Saturday and tells them stuff, Kevin and Charles still know a few things from the Redskins game. So it's tough to imagine that they're just going to be tight-lipped around Greg Olsen and say, yeah, we're working with you, but we're not. The Vikings told us not to tell you anything. There's probably going to be a little bit of informational exchange. Now, the question is, does it matter? Do you think it matters? Is there something so secretive that would have been revealed that Greg could actually help exploit the Vikings when they play the Panthers?
Yeah, I think that both sides have a point. I think Olsen probably thinks that, listen, I'm just calling the game. I'm not getting all this information. Let's not overthink this thing. I think Rick Spielman says, hey, you know, why do you have to have Greg Olsen call, you know, a Vikings game when we play him in a few weeks? You would think that Fox or whoever, you know, hires these guys that are still playing, you would try to find a game that has no overlap. You know, find a game that, you know, of a team that Carolina has already played or doesn't play this year. That would make the most sense to me. You know, Fox really screwed this thing up. And the fact they picked a team out, that would seem obvious to me. If I'm the scheduler or on that team of schedulers who picks out who's going to go where each week, and they usually do things, I believe, about 3, 4, 5 weeks out, you know, based off of records and matchups and those types of things, that I would go, oh, we want Greg Olsen to do a game. Let's not have him do a Vikings game, being that the Carolina Panthers play the Vikings a couple of weeks after. That would make a lot of sense.
So when you were playing at quarterback, I assume you got invited into a few production meetings yourself, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I always felt like I try to keep things close to the vest, but I know that those production guys, those guys calling the game and the producers, they really do appreciate you giving them extra information. And it's a, you know, sort of rule of thumb that, you know, they keep that really close to the vest. So they obviously don't go and talk to the other team, you know, about the things you say. But yeah, you talk about, you know, we're going to dress this guy, he's going to start, but man, that hamstring's really tight. You know, he may not even last very long, or, you know, this guy's injured, and his backup's not very good. I mean, you do give that type of information so they have an idea going into the game what your strengths and weaknesses are, what your concerns are.
And here's another quote from Olsen. He says, for anyone who has ever been in those broadcast production meetings, if you're spilling your deepest, darkest game plan secrets to the broadcast crew, that's kind of on you. We're not getting anything that's really going to give you much insight on how to beat them. Well, maybe that's true. I assume that it's case to case. I'm sure there's some coaches that are very forthright and honest, and some that are probably close to the vest. Mike Zimmer strikes me as someone who is very close to the vest, and maybe that comes down from the top, because I think Rick Spielman is one of the more secretive GMs in football. But poor Kevin Burkhardt and Charles Davis, who have to go on Saturday, because I don't think they're going to get a whole lot of anything. I think that might be press conference mode Zimmer rather than open book Zimmer.
Oh, I think the players are going to be basically taught to, like, you know what, Fox screwed this up. Fox is going to get no information. That's how I would do it if I was a head coach and if I had this concern. I'd say, you're going to go into that production meeting and you're not going to say anything. I mean, really, literally say almost nothing, and make it Fox's problem. At the end of the day, it's Fox's fault, and there should be one that sort of has to deal with the consequences, which is getting basically no information from the Vikings.
Yeah, that's crazy. And, you know, on the other side of the coin, that there are guys all the time that get picked up from opposing practice squads, and they've been with other teams, and I'm not sure that the information they give is, you know, necessarily swinging the result of games. Like, the Vikings had a guy, Isaac Frichte, who was on their practice squad for all but 2 weeks of last year, and he went to Detroit on their active roster for, you know, 2 or 3 games last year. Then he got cut, and the Vikings got him back. And the Vikings lost to Detroit twice last year. You know, it's not like that is necessarily the be-all, end-all, but it's the 1% or the 2% advantage that maybe that gives that can maybe swing, you know, one out of every 10 games, and that might be what keeps you in or out of the playoffs. So I get why there's paranoia. I really do. It's a league that is so built on minute advantages, and Bill Belichick has found ways to exploit those in the past to his advantage, And the Vikings obviously trying to keep every advantage possible in their hands. So that'll be interesting to watch, and interesting to see how they incorporate Olsen into that broadcast. I don't know if it's going to be a three-man booth or what. The Vikings and Rams is going to be a wonderful spectacle. Vikings-Rams on Sunday. What have you seen so far from the Rams this year? I know they're sometimes kind of buried in that late game, maybe not shown locally on a lot of stations, but have you seen Goff? Have you seen McVay at work? And what do you think of this Los Angeles team?
Yeah, I've actually watched them a lot. I've studied them my fair share this year. You know, Goff is obviously, you know, being that I basically am studying NFL quarterbacks, that Goff is one of the guys that's been the big surprise of the year. McVay has made an unbelievable impact on his ability to, you know, play the position of quarterback. So they use Todd Gurley like Todd Gurley should be used. He's a superstar running back. I'm not going to say he's a young Adrian Peterson, but, you know, he's one of those few running backs in the league that truly is sort of a franchise back. He's an unbelievable ball carrier. He also is really good on the backfield. He's caught, you know, seam routes out of the backfield for, you know, 50 or 60 yard touchdowns. He's a guy that can get 25 or 30 carries a game. He catches the ball well. He's a full three down back. Because of that, they have really, really designed well these sort of play action schemes. You know, the better you run the ball, the more those safeties get closer to the box, and the better shots you have, better chance you have of taking shots down the field. Goff right now is leading the NFL in yards per attempt at 8.5. That says a lot when you go from what a lot of people thought he was a bust last year to leading the NFL in yards per attempt. So he's having a very good year. They don't have any big name wide receivers. You know, Sammy Watkins they traded for early in the year. There's this kid Robert Woods, number 17, who might be one of the fastest guys in the NFL. He's definitely a low 4.3 guy. They'll throw him wide receiver screens. Last week they threw him a 94-yard touchdown pass on the post off of that play action, which the safety sucked up too tight, and Woods was wide open on a post route, and it wasn't even close. Once that ball was in the air, he was out. They got a sort of a slew of about three or four wide receivers. They're not big names. They all do different things well, but there's a lot of speed at that position. So, you know, Goff, basically it's running the ball and play action and taking a shot deep, and they've been very successful this season. And obviously their defense is really, that was the strength of the team for, I don't know, over a decade now. It seems like their defense has been good while their offense has been sort of crappy. Well, McVay has sort of turned around that offense. That defense is still very good. The Aaron Donald, their defensive lineman, probably a top five player in the NFL.
Yeah, they don't have many weaknesses at all on this team. They're good special teams and good defense. Number three in the league defense, number one in the league offensively in terms of points. Aaron Donald, and the people couldn't rave enough about Aaron Donald yesterday. And Case Keenum is a guy that practiced against him in Los Angeles. He could attest to how good he is. Mike Zimmer was just chuckling at how they're going to stop this guy because he's so dominant. They've got Ethan Westbrooks and Robert Quinn. They've got Michael Brockers. Connor Barwin is a good player. He's hurt right now. Not sure if he's going to play, but they've also got LaMarcus Joyner, a good safety. He's also battling injury, but they have good players on defense. And when an offense like that and a defense like that, I mean, that this is legitimately a team that could go places. Now, maybe the only weakness they have is run defense. And I think the Vikings are going to need to establish McKinnon, get Murray going in this one. Case Keenum is going to be their quarterback. Are you pleased to see that the Vikings did make that official yesterday?
I am, and I was sort of battling people on Twitter yesterday about this decision, and it has nothing to do with the fact that I don't love Teddy Bridgewater. I mean, I think Teddy is a really good quarterback. I think he's got a bright future, whether it's with the Vikings or somebody else. I think the thing is when you're a player and somebody gets hurt and you come in and you play well enough that you win five games in a row as a quarterback, and you just come off a game, you throw four touchdown passes. Yeah, you threw two interceptions, but you throw four touchdown passes. You get a big lead. You win on the road against a quality ball club, and then your job is up, you know, for debate. And I just sort of think that's absurd. Now, I understand that people believe that Teddy's sort of ceiling is higher than Case's, which it may be. No one really knows, right? Because we don't even know what Teddy's ceiling is. He hasn't played in a year and a half, so we have no idea. This is also a completely different offense that he was in from a year and a half ago, that more relied on Adrian Peterson, and Norv Turner was the coordinator. All I do know is this, that Case Keenum has done it and played very, very well. He is the third highest QBR in the NFL, the third highest. And the fact that there's debate that he, you know, might be or should be taken out because, you know, Teddy is the future and Teddy has this, you know, higher ceiling when it comes to playoff time and things like that. There's a lot more unknowns, I think, that we don't realize about Teddy Bridgewater. And I think another thing is, you know, there was so much hype with Teddy going into that third season before he tore out his knee. And I think people are still living off that sort of hype, and it's a totally different situation now. So I like the fact that, you know, Case is still the starter. I think he should be given more credit to the job that he has done. So he's done a really good job. And I never like it when just because, you know, one guy was a first-round draft pick automatically means that he's a better quarterback and one guy is an undrafted. I mean, Tom Brady was a sixth-round pick. Kurt Warner was an undrafted guy. I'm not saying that Case Keenum's going to be those guys, but I think that we shouldn't be going off of, you know, who was drafted higher or those types of things from, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, because I think that would be a wrong way to make a decision on who your starting quarterback is.
Something that will always be true amongst fans is that they are infatuated with mystery. They are infatuated with the unknown and the possibilities, always trying to get better. And there might be less mystery with Case, but the concrete knowledge we have of Case so far this season is that he's doing a pretty good job. And he said in a radio interview last week that he finds it humorous that people try to put labels on people, and you know, media pundits try to say he is a backup quarterback. That's his label. That's his classification for life. Fortunately, I don't think NFL coaching staffs necessarily view things that way. Maybe you disagree with that, Sage, but I feel like they are more impartial, and they're going to grade guys as they're playing, not based on their draft status.
Well, you like to think so, but I believe that a lot of times that stereotype does sort of, you know, sit and land. I mean, you know who won the MVP of the NFL in 2002? A guy named Rich Gannon. Rich Gannon was a career backup. I mean, he didn't even play that much. Kansas City Chiefs, you know, the stops that he was before the Oakland Raiders, he was a career backup. Even as a Vikings, you know, quarterback, he played here and there, but, you know, a lot of backup time and was pegged into that spot. So, you know, really the Case has been a backup. It's not like he's a 9-year, you know, player here. He really, you know, he started off as an undrafted guy. And if anything, he should be a guy you root for. I mean, he has worked his way up from practice squad to roster to practice squad to roster to playing, you know, on a bad Rams last team, leading to 4-5 and actually putting up decent stats when Goff came in and was terrible after they took out Case Keenum last year. So I'm sitting there going, you know, maybe he's as good as Jared Goff, who people are thinking is a really good quarterback right now, right? So to me, I hate the stereotype. You know, he's only been in the league for about, what, 5 years, you know, 5-6 years. He has been a backup the majority of his career, but he has also slowly, methodically worked his way up into me, being a starting caliber quarterback, and he is a starting quarterback.
And I did some digging yesterday, too, on the Los Angeles offensive line compared to the Vikings offensive line, and it's night and day. Case Keenum is a mobile, elusive quarterback, and even that being said, he had one of the highest sack rates last year, and it wasn't just Keenum. Goff had a higher sack rate. Goff had the highest sack rate in the NFL out of all of his dropbacks, and Keenum was number 6. And this year, Keenum is the number 1 quarterback against pressure. So I think that goes to show that there wasn't much going good for Los Angeles last year. They had Greg Robinson at left tackle, who is now fledgling in Detroit. He's not very good. And now they've got Andrew Whitworth handling things there. And I wrote an article about that yesterday, and I kind of talked about it on yesterday's show, that the new left tackles on both these teams have really made a big impact. One last question I have for you, Sage, and you mentioned Norv Turner and the new offense now that the Vikings have. Can you see, from a quarterback's eye, can you see the differences between Norv Turner's offense last year and Pat Shurmur's offense this year? Do they pop out to you when you look at them, you know, side by side?
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of differences. You know, there's a lot more movement plays. When I may say movement, I mean, you know, bootlegs and play action type plays. A lot more this year, I believe, than in the past. There is less just sort of straight drop back vertical passing game. There's less shotgun plays than in the past. You know, Norv really liked to push the ball down the field or try to push the ball down the field, force the defense to cover deep and then, you know, check the ball down or whatever. So I think there's more creativity in the way they design the run game. It does seem like just a little more precise offense under Pat Shurmur. I think Pat Shurmur's done an absolutely fantastic job. Let's go around the league and see how many teams that would be in first place if their backup quarterback was now their starter. So I think he's and your tailback is also out. So I think Pat Shermer's done a fantastic job, and I think it's a very detailed offense. And I think he really tries to customize it to take advantage of Case Keenum's strength, which is he's an athletic guy, he throws well on the run. I also think Teddy Bridgewater matches up with this style of offense better than he would match up with a North Turner offense as well. So I think Norv would actually have been better for a Sam Bradford type offense, just a pure thrower down the field. And I think that Pat Shermer's offense is more fit for these other two quarterbacks.
Yeah, it might have been nice for Norv to have his offense with this offensive line. I think when you have a drop back deep ball offense with that offensive line, that was never going to work. So let's do a quick pick on tonight's game. Titans at Steelers. The Steelers are favored by 7. They're 7-2. Titans are 6-3. This is a good game.
This is a very good game. I really thought it's surprising to me that it's a 7-point. The Steelers are 7-point favorites in this game. I thought it would be, you know, maybe a field goal or something. Two good ball clubs. But being that the case, I'll go with the Steelers. I don't feel great about it, but I'm going to go with 80% for the Steelers in this game. I want to say just because of the home team, but I saw a stat the other day that it's pretty much 50-50 home and away this year in the NFL, but I'll still go with the Steelers at home. They seem to have a good home field advantage up there.
I'm going to go with the Titans. I think the Titans are going to pull this upset, and it feels to me like Pittsburgh is sort of the erratic team where they're a little bit bipolar. You're not sure what you're going to get sometimes certain weeks, and they shock you with these bizarre losses. They haven't had one of those in a while. Tennessee is going to pull the upset tonight on a short week. These are kind of coin flip games sometimes on these Thursday nights, and I think the Titans are playing pretty good football right now. So I will take Tennessee in the upset. I definitely think they'll cover that spread, but I think they win the game outright. Sage will get our NFC North picks in tomorrow, including the Vikings and Rams.
Sounds good.
All right, he's Sage. I'm Sam. It's Locked On Vikings, Locked On Podcast Network. Have a great day.